being a good person is what? Being okay, so on that, and yet knowing at the same time that I had these terribly ugly dreams that I would be hung for if my dreams were actually real.
Your sleeping dream? You mean your literal sleeping dreams or your fantasies or both?
I'm talking about sleeping.
Yeah, right. Yeah, well, nobody gets sentenced for their dreams, thank God. Not yet, anyway.
Where do they come from? Where do these ugly, nasty things come from? They're not you. I refuse to accept these dreams in which I've acted in.
Well, I think you have to accept everything. I mean, I think this is, well, that's a big subject, but...
Well, yeah, you get into dreams.
And in terms of the parts of us that we don't accept and that we want to reject, I mean, that's where those dreams come from, I would say. The ugly dreams come from not accepting the ugly parts of ourselves in a waking, eyes open way. Like actually being willing to look at the ugly aspects of ourselves and acknowledge that they're in us, so we push them down and then they have to come up somewhere, so they come up in our dreams, if we're lucky, you know. If they only come up in our dreams, then I think that's a relatively benign expression.
Yeah, well, these people that act out things that you wouldn't even think about doing in your dreams, or if only in your dreams.
Yeah, there's nothing that I haven't dreamed. Yeah, there's nothing I haven't thought about or dreamed about. I mean, not literally, as in I've covered every single aspect, but I mean, there's nothing really that can exceed my dreams or my nightmares in terms of dark psychic content. I think you know that about me.
Well, I don't know about your dreams, I know about your dark psychic content. But my dreams are, I won't talk about my dreams. I just won't do it.
No,
I have done it before, and I do. I write about it and post a dream that I have, but they're not these dark dreams. These dark dreams.
We won't talk about your dreams.
That's probably what you say. I mean, they've got to come up, and they come out that way. I don't know how your sleeping mind can write the scenarios and then film it, too, make it... put it in these landscapes. How in the devil do we do that anyway? Boy, that's a wonder. All the kaleidoscope that we put together as something that means to us in our sleep, in our waking sleep, I guess most of it happens too.
You know what Freud believed or wrote about or discovered or however you want to look at that. He believed that we're dreaming all the time as well while we're awake, but it's passing so fast that subliminally these images are actually going through our mind just as if we were dreaming with our eyes open, but they're going so fast that we don't see them, and that this content of the past, like things that were unresolved in the past, we're constantly recreating them in that film set of our minds as you described it, basically, you know, witnessing that and then forgetting that we've witnessed it, and that's why we're unable to really see the reality or interact with other people, because we're constantly interacting unconsciously with this dream, with this memory dream content.
Right. Yeah. Well, why not? I mean, you know, he's Freud.
He's Freud. You know, listen to Freud. Yeah, well, I think it's a model that has some.
But you know, Freud. Merit. Good Lord! I mean, this guy was a fiction writer almost, wasn't he? That took things that were actually the way of fact, and he did his own research and made them into a sort of a fiction that described a whole category of the human being and why we're the way that we are. Psychology. And he did that. It's very Shakespearean.
I wasn't going to say Shakespeare, but I was going to say fiction may be the surest route to get to the truth if we're not.
Well, I was saying using Shakespeare because of the fact that he compiled and made it into such a compendium all of this, these things and these transactions that were going on in the world anyway, and he was able to grab a hold of them and make a sense out of out of this and make a world of it, and other scientists read it and they say, oh, well, yeah, I guess, you know, I mean, it takes them into areas that they haven't been into, but they've been thinking about it, and he somehow makes it concrete. I don't know, maybe Einstein did some of that with the EM.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, I wonder sometimes whether or not the mathematics and all of the angles of ourselves that reach out into the universe itself and become us, if that all isn't what you're just saying is. I mean, it could be the Freudian explanation for it, could it not? I mean, who knows? I've got this to tell you the truth, though, I don't have a mathematical outlook at the world, or you know, or geometric. I understand somehow that math is involved in the makeup of the universe. I figure that there is a mathematical quotient somehow. That to me is mathematics, and it is that to me too. But it's triangles and geometry and geology and trigonometry, it all reaches out and somehow is answering to us with this mathematics. And I don't even know what I'm talking about hardly now, but that's how I kind of look at it. But when I look at the way it is, everything,
yeah,
I certainly don't look at it.
It seems chaotic, no?
No, it doesn't seem chaotic. It doesn't seem that way. It seems, on the contrary, it seems like it's not chaotic. Is it orderly, then? That's the other side of it. I would say it's very orderly.
Well, because geometry and mathematics is the, you know, is a very ordered, sequenced. I wouldn't say interpretation. I don't know how to describe it, but I mean, if the universe is based on geometrical and mathematical principles, which it seems that it must be, then it's very ordered. That's perfect order. So it seems as though when we're seeing,
yeah, and that doesn't mean to me that it has to have a beginning or an end to it. Or does it mean that it has to have a superior power over what it is? The superpower of all of this we're talking about right now is simply that it is. That's why I say, let the mystery be.
Yeah.
I can't get beyond that. But I do believe that it is. I believe if you pinch me, I feel your pinch. You know, cut me, I bleed. I believe that. I exist. That's without a question. What Freud was saying about the dream, that too, that could be a part of my of the way I'm looking at things, you know. You know, it could all be an illusion. I don't look at it as any kind of an illusion, however.
Mm-hmm.
I think that there's that consideration, but I don't think that it's the way it is. The way it is to me is the way it is. And so consequently, God to me is, I definitely believe in God. I'm no atheist. Christ, I'm not an atheist.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm certainly not a biblical believer of any kind, or any cult of any sort, or self-help or whatever. What it is that I see, self-help gets something else, but is into something else. But what I see simply is the way, you know, as they're saying. It's just simply, so the great beyond, when I pray, and I've told you this, I think, and we got into that on Cohen, I'm praying to the way it is, and I want to be able to reach it. Now that we're talking about it, and that's what bothered me about that Cohen song, is the fact is that he was destroying that line of contact. If I were to sing that song, I would be seeing visions, that hallelujah. I'd be, you know, I saw her in the kitchen chair. She tied me to a kitchen chair. You know, I was beguiled because of the way the moon was, and she cut my hair.
Mm-hmm.
Sitting in that chair, you know, I'm seeing Samson and some biblical thing happening here with a man,
mm-hmm.
First of all, through Cohen. I'm seeing that, well, wait a minute, we're singing, well, okay, that's okay, hallelujah. Well, we're singing to God, I guess. Certainly we're singing to God. That's hallelujah. Glory be, praise be. To me, that's what hallelujah is, and that to me is what the great beyond is, and it is simply without a superior head to it. But I see superior heads. I see Sistine Chapel and Michelangelo's God reaching out and touching the angel with the wings and or beginning life or whatever, however he puts that. Sure, that's all a part of it, but the way that I actually believe, I have to believe, the way that I am, is the fact is that it simply is.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so consequently, Cohen and his music. What would that? But I, again, we get back to that. But so real. So I it brought me to my faith. And I told you that in the email. You did. Cohen did. This fucker. Cohen brought me to my faith. I didn't even... My faith is... It's I'm not... What if I'm a Christian? Yeah, I am a Christian. I've never denied my Christianity, but I don't believe in all that horseshit, you know? Mm-hmm. And yet I listen to the Pope and some of the distinctions, apparently, that he's making that we appreciate that don't seem to be as churchian as they once were in Vatican. But, you know, I don't like authority, for one thing, and Jesus. I say Jesus all the time. The funny thing about Jesus is, I'll tell you something about Jesus. Jesus almost does become a real person here, you know. I mean, knowing that it's all the Trinity and the Holy Spirit and all that, that's horseshit. And yet there's something being explained to us through it,
mm-hmm.
I think, you know. And so that's for us to to use in our healthy system to come out with the fact that, well, that's okay. Explain what it is. You know, the Holy Spirit. But they build up all this horseshit around the cathedrals and the Latin screeds, and that's cool too. It doesn't mean that I have to. I'm moved by it. Gee, me, I'm moved by cathedrals, you know, and organs. I'm moved by that. There's something, boy, about. I went down to the Catholic Church here, the new one that's 15 years old now, I guess, but down on Sunset. And it's kind of a bricky thing on the outside, but inside it's glorious. And they have this great big cathedral in the, off the courtyard, and within it is at the end of it is this great grand organ. And it wasn't playing when Shaw and I went in there. He's the one that took me to it. Actually, said suggested it. He's Catholic. I'm not. We went in, and in a few moments, the damn organ starts to play. Jesus Christ! I've never. What a sound, man. I'm just almost choked up now thinking about that. That was a great moment. A great moment of being at this new cathedral and they're just sitting there and looking at the Catholic things. And suddenly the organ starts to play in this whew, moments. And that's religion. That's a church that's built to reach up to I tell you, I'm choking up right now. That's the way I get about it. I'm very, very, very close to religion. I really am. But I won't have anything to do with it the way that it's written. But mm-hmm. Jesus Christ! I mean, that guy. There's something else again that he comes down with, and that these great writers made of this manufactured figure who never existed as we know him, for heaven's sakes. Miracles. Raising from the dead? Well, what the heck? I mean, of course not. The guy's in a dead and maggots on him, and he's. But I mean, you know, it could happen that somebody's just about ready. They thought he was, but he was in a coma. You know, but that story is a bunch of horseshit anyway. Who needs it? They only. But I think the people that were Christians that took on that from him and made a big thing of the goddamn thing were the ones that. That raised all this horseshit up to us, but the man or whatever he represented and who, the writers that created him, they were thinking right, you know, they were thinking very tribal and relatively healthy, that's what was best for the family, and he was a good fella to lead his people, as was Moses, I guess. You know, I don't know. These things, it's all horseshit. That's why I'm looking at it. But it is kind of a history to me. I think they captured some history. There was a Moses, there was a Christ, and they did extraordinary things, these people. They were great people, and people that did something made them into what they are. Same thing with Muhammad. That fucker, he's a warrior with a flaming sword. He always was. I've always been suspicious of him for that, and yet he's teaching the same thing, isn't he, supposedly? Is that his do unto others? Isn't that what he's teaching?
Not really. It's hard to say. I mean, yeah, I'm not really up on that stuff anymore. I used to be. So.
Well, where are you right now in terms of your search?
Do you mean specifically in terms of what you've been talking about, like my sense of?
Well, in the sense of what you're doing. You're doing because you have to do it, and obviously, and you're doing it, and it's very unique what you do because nobody else does it. Nobody else probably wants to do it.
No, I can probably try and describe to you how I'm seeing it. I'm not sure if I'll be able to. It's that thing again. I don't have my act down pat, but I have a sense of why I'm doing what I'm doing, in the larger sense, and it has to do with finding the metaphors that allow me to see. Is that funny?
Well, yeah, metaphors. I remember that. You use that now and again, and it really sticks with me what metaphor is. Metaphor is something that isn't real.
Yeah, which is everything in my mind. To my view, everything is a metaphor, because if we're—I mean, if anything exists, it's what's eternal. Because otherwise, everything's going to go away, everything's going to die, everything is going to disappear. The only thing that'll be left is whatever's eternal. So, what is eternal is what's real, and so anything that we can talk about or name or experience through our senses is not that. It's not eternal. So, therefore, it's a metaphor for something else. So, all of this
Well,
worldly
I agree with all
stuff.
of that, you know.
Yeah.
It's important to know that. I mean, that's how I look at it as well. There may be some nuances that we could describe. Yeah, go ahead.
Right. All of this worldly stuff, it seems to me, MK Ultra and satanic conspiracies and you name it, whatever, I
Well,
don't.
that, you know, see, that we've always butted heads on this light and dark stuff, you know, satanic and angelic.
Yeah.
The satanic, I don't get obsessed with this in any way with the satanic. I think it exists. I think there's almost a literal devil, a figurative devil, what is it, literal devil. You know, I almost feel that, and yet I know better. And so all of what
Right.
you're saying doesn't fall so far apart from. But I don't. You seem to
No,
stress
but you
satanic.
use the word evil. I don't really use the word evil, so I use that as shorthand, and I shouldn't use the word satanic at all. But it's just shorthand. How do you kind of sum up
Well, I think evil
something?
exists, though. See, I mean,
Okay, well, so then I don't. So I shouldn't use the word satanic.
you really don't. I mean, how can you not think evil doesn't? It's not something you can put your hand on it,
No, I
but.
mean, I don't think good exists. So how can I think evil exists? They're just words, right?
Well, I do. I think good does it. Well, okay.
I don't see there's a war of light and dark, let's put it that way. I don't feel that the nature of existence is a war of opposites. I think that that's a metaphor.
Well, I think the universe is run by love, and that it is good. So right away, I always end
Good
up
in
with.
contrast to what? So that's why you have to have evil, and round it goes, and that's the trap that we're in, the
But
duality of
you're
consciousness.
suggesting then that I should not think that the world is the universe is good, basically.
No, I'm not suggesting you should think or shouldn't think anything. I'm just saying that if you have an idea of good, that depends on an idea of evil. So we sustain the existence of evil by having the notion of goodness, and things just, as you said, the world just is. It
Well,
just
how
is.
could I be without either one of those? What would I be
Well,
like?
this is my point that I was getting at, that I see my process as finding the metaphors through examining my own experience and what's going on in the world, the metaphors that will lead me to a full bodily recognition that I do not exist as a discrete entity or as a mental construct, that my idea of who I am is a metaphor. I'm just text, I'm just information, I'm just
Well, I
consciousness.
ask you then, why don't you just accept that right now?
Right, apparently it's a journey of zero distance and it can just happen, but I'm an intellectual explorer, and what I do is
Right.
engage my intellect, and so
Right.
I'm going to do it anyway, right? I can't just, I'm
Right.
not going to do what Buddha does and just sit under a tree and
But you'll
wait.
never find it then, of course, because I mean, the most important thing to you is this the process.
The process, well, the most important thing is the process. I mean, you asked where I'm at in terms of my search, and so I was trying to describe how I'm understanding. Why do I have this compulsion to uncover the truth, knowing as I do that, as you say, I'll never find the truth, because you can't. You can become the truth, but you can't find it. You can't know it. It just is. So why do I keep doing this? Or how can I justify it? But how can I contextualize it in a way that's meaningful? Maybe it is all just a rationalization, of course, but. This is it anyway, whatever it is, that to let go of the self-reflective identity that believes it exists separate from all of existence without going completely insane requires a sort of gradual process of seeing the reality incrementally, piece by piece by piece. Like if I were to suddenly see the truth nature of existence, I would lose my marbles, it seems to me. I mean, maybe not. Maybe I'm wrong. Some people do
Oh, I
seem to
don't.
get.
How can you? I don't. That's hard for me to believe that of you.
Of you, of me, I mean.
Yeah, that you lose your marbles when you find the answer.
Well, I didn't mean that. I mean, if I was, I said if I were to see the true nature of existence,
The truth of existence, then okay, truth of
which is
existence.
that I don't exist. I mean, that's
Yeah.
isn't that a frightening thing? The idea that you don't exist. I mean, you're closer to
Isn't that a
annihilation
what
than
thing?
I am. Isn't it a frightening prospect to be staring one's
Well, yeah, but
non-existence?
that gets to the point of, you see, to me, that's where we once again part ways. Because I have no desire to for the same things you do here, to find, or also fear. I mean, or am I doing that? That's the thing. I don't do what you do. I don't. I'm not searching for that. Of what it is that I am, and nor do I fear to find out what it is that I am. So, or am I? Must I keep on doing it? Because when I do, why then I'll end, because I already know what it is that I'll find, which is that which it means that then everything else has, it's all been kind of stupid anyway, actually, in a way. I don't see that. I don't look at it that way.
No, well, but I think that you do, and I do, and we both kind of look at it both ways, and we're both sort of chasing our own tails and watching how the other's doing it. So, I mean, you, because you talk about evil, but then you also say that you see it's absurd, the world is absurd, and that's the underlying truth about the world, as
Oh
in not.
gosh! So yeah, I mean, I think you're being too
Well, those are two
hard
points of
on me
view.
here with this. Yeah, that's true. All of that. I mean,
Because
the world
evil and
to me is
absurdity.
absurd, but it's meaningful, but it's absurd. And so within that is evil, and that's what makes some of it absurd.
Right. So then
And
it's
within
not
it is
evil.
good.
It's like a comedian, isn't it? A comedian can talk about absolutely anything, no matter how dark and atrocious. And if he does it right, it's absurd. It reveals the absurdity of evil and everything else.
Right.
I mean, everything else, including the quest. I mean, the quest is absurd. I know that. But I can't actually stop. I know that I can't stop. So what I'm trying to stop is to stop being ambivalent about it. To stop pulling in two directions at the same time. Like, I shouldn't do this, but I'm going to do it. Oh no, I'm doing it wrong. Oh no, I should be doing it a different way. Just recognize that this is what I do and that it's part of my nature. It's kind
Right.
of been programmed into me in good ways and bad ways and a bit
Yeah,
both. And that sooner or later, I'm going to get to the core of me, of who I am.
yeah.
Sooner, because.
Okay, yeah, right. Follow that sort of lifestyle and perception about things, other than this core difference that we have. But yes, and that's what I'm saying. Except to just want you to know that I agree with you, and do find it very, very absurd. Yeah, and funny. Yeah, really. Yeah, absurd. That's right. And here you are, to me, right now. You're well immersed within the absurd, and realizing is as such, and yet taking it very seriously. And I do too,
We have to,
in my
really.
way. See, but I'm not interested in the same thing you are. It seems like to me that thank God I say for myself, because it allows me to be silly in other ways. Boy, then that's why I oftentimes will kind of make fun in my emails all the time about your essays and your focus matter. I just love to deal with you that way, and so I do, but Now you're a wild friend, I'll tell you. Because thank you for being around. I mean, and thank Phil Snyder for this. I do these kinds of things. It doesn't interest you, I suppose, or most people. But I think the starting point to which is Phil and what it's led to is marvelously in my favor. That's damn for sure. Because you've expanded me in ways that I wouldn't have been able to do because there's nobody to bounce off of. Except you. You're the only one like this, you know, and so that opportunity comes my way, and you play the game, and you enjoy it too, because it puts you to challenge in some areas. So it's terrific that way. It's about time that Leonard Cohen brought us together, you know what? I mean, engineering culture, engineering as a focus, and then wow. Cohen come into play here, and I had no idea he meant so much to me and that. But because I'm learning his music and no one wanted to sing it at all, wow, it came together so perfectly, and it's important to me. Then it becomes important now. Cultural engineering becomes important. So now we get into your feelings about the Laurel Canyon and all that. And I say I'm into conspiracies, but I'm not into conspiracies. You know,
Sure, I know that. I know that. So you're a sounding board for me.
The exploding towers in New York City on September 11th, for example, 2001. Why that to me, the pictures that stay in my mind are the imploding buildings and that fifth or that third building that went down for no reason whatsoever. And it goes down like demolition to me.
Yeah.
Now, I see it as an inside job, and yes, I will give the credence and possibility thereof of the administration of George W. Bush being involved with it. I will do that. The CIA will do anything, man. Anything. There's nothing they won't do. And that is bringing down the towers unless, getting back down to the main point and confusing those 19, or rather not confusing, giving them the chance, those 19 hijackers, 15 of which was from Iraq, the family of Osama bin Laden, so to speak, you know, you distance them out from each other, cousins, and that. What the devil is this all about here? I mean, Marty, there's this business about the September 11th. Is there a conspiracy? I can buy that. I can buy the Kennedy conspiracy easy. Easy. CIA behind it, well, mob behind it, well, all that.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe together, mob and CIA. They worked together before, Luciano and after World War II and the CIA. I forgot they used him for something or other. You can believe anything, and that's what you say. That's a connection between you and me. Yeah, we see all of these things that are going on in the world. I think we're doomed, to be honest with you. The thing about it is, and doom pow, well, I mean, there are these atomic bombs, for one thing. But we're doomed. I think we're just going, I don't think there's any way out of this thing all over the world except a total, total, horrible, horrible revolution.
All the young girls look like ravens as they flock around the pool, and they peck at their reflections in the shadows of men's drool. I could look at them forever. Windows of eternity, you can glimpse the passing souls. Now the party's over, the bells are ringing themselves. I'm going home. She was was standing on a table with a message on her skin. I tried to look right through her eyes, but I could not see in. I have loved you from a distance, loved you from a close, like the tiny frog that breathes, I could nestle in your clothes.
Well, I think we're doomed anyway, you slice, because even if we sort all our problems out and create a utopia, the sun will still burn out and everybody will eventually
be dead. Don't you think, Jason, that that this utopia that finally we bloody well evolved and it exists for, 500 years?
Did it? Wow. You're speaking hypothetically.
The utopia, this fantasy land that doesn't exist.
Yeah, yeah.
This utopia, we finally, through bloody revolutions, finally people wising up to the fact is we control the means of production and distribution and finance and everything. We control this. Who is we? People in committees all over. There's committees every corner of the cranny of the world. Committees are constantly at work. And deciding answers that are best for everybody, and because they're consulting each other all the time, and it has to do with benefit for the neighborhoods, and capitalistic-minded people, and money-making people, and ambitious people. Okay, let them go, but they're regulated, very much controlled, and very secondary to the primary purpose of the. Okay, we developed this, the utopia finally globally. Fine, and maybe we started, or maybe we don't. It would be nice if America we started this whole ball going. But it's there. You're right. That's something I think about all the time. Within this are human beings that really have not changed. That's the thing. In much DNA-wise, say, for example, they haven't been test-tubed out like Brave New World, like maybe is the answer to this. But instead, they're just simply now they're dealing with the method of governing that is socialism and becomes a real utopia. Everybody should be happy because they're treated really quite fairly. But within this comes people who are people and human beings, and they won't. This is boring after a while. They're going to, let's get more for myself and my family, and it starts over again. But that's the process, isn't it? I mean, what else can there be except to end the whole thing? So you just keep on working for what the best thing is rather than to give up, you know. And you don't actually believe that it can be changed. Somehow maybe. The world can be changed.
Maybe. That's probably where we part ways as well, because I'm a preacher of no hope. I'm a preacher of giving up all hope and living without hope. I think that's the way out. I think that's the narrow, straight gate or whatever it is that, you know.
Well, you know what John Cleese said just the other day on Friday on the, I think it was the Friday before last on the Bill Maher show was, it's hopeless.
Uh-huh.
He just comes right out with it. But, you know, it's John Cleese saying this, and he's funny, but, you know, but he means it. It's hopeless. That's the way I figured it.
Yeah, and I don't feel hopeless, you know. I feel more and more hope. I don't know if it's quite right to say I feel more and more hopeful, but I feel more and more positive the less illusions I have about stuff. And as you were saying about just letting it be, letting the mystery be, well, the world is a mystery too, and you and I are mysteries. Everything is part of the mystery. So if I can just let it all be, and not try to change anything, then I'm actually going to arrive. That would be the end of the quest. So that, I mean, I come from a family.
How do you know that?
Well, because that's self-evident. That's a self-evident. If you let everything be as it is, if you're able to let everything be, then there's nothing left to do. Then that's it. It's over.
Well, you're not eating very well during this.
No, I don't. I don't mean you're not doing anything, but you're not trying to. I mean, yeah, okay. So survival needs. You might.
I said eating, not being, by the way. Eating.
Yeah, I know, but
it goes hand in hand. Well, you just fade away.
Well, no. There's a difference between trying to improve the world or improve one's conditions and simply taking care of your bodily needs. There's a huge difference.
Which are you doing? Your bodily needs?
Yeah, the bodily needs. I mean, I am taking care of my bodily needs. I hope you are too, at your age.
Oh, yeah, but by the way, that's just one thing before we ring off here. How about aging? How about that? What does that do? Have we talked about that?
No, we haven't. And you're the authority in the room. So.
Your physical self goes quite a bit, so that's debilitating. You don't get out and around as much, and so consequently you're not taking in quite as much as a consequence of face-to-face with things, because you stay warm within your place than before. Even shopping is maybe less and less, but without a car, busing it, and busing becomes less important too.
Busing?
It just simply does. You don't set up things where you're gonna have to take the, but you do. You take the bus, and you know you can get to where I go to the valley for my dental hygienist. But so it pulls you in, and which is for me and my type of personality anyway. What's the big deal? I don't want to play golf. I worked out up until 5, 6, 7 years ago, and I still got my gym membership, so that's available if I want to take. But I quit doing that some years back because it just, I reached a point where I didn't think it was important anymore. Not to do it. I thought I could get my respiration going just by living, and working around, doing what I do in my place, and shopping and walking, and that, with as much as I did do, I thought that would be the exercise. So you pulled in. For my gym, I have the membership there available anytime I want to go down and pump some iron or take to the track and plunk around it. May never do that at all. But it's so the mind, though, now I lose my short-term memory. I think more, and I'm still trying to think of the woman who introduced me to my wife, last one that it was very important in my life because she introduced me to her. I can't think of her name. I lose names for a while, I don't forget where my keys are. Of course, I put them in a specific spot. I don't forget things around where they are too much. Actually, I have so much junk around that there are times when I go after something and it takes me a little while to find it, or I don't find it that particular moment and I go back for it another time because I don't need it exactly at that moment. And there are some things I lose now and again. I never will find them, but papers mostly.
So what about the upside of this then, the upside of aging?
The mind doesn't it may lose its cells, but it makes up for it because it's able to more, I think, focus now on really what it's more interested in anyway, and uh-huh. So it works on those things and deals with them, and the juices that you have as a young man are gone, and those things made you, whatever work you were involved with at the time, whether selling cars or doing comedy somewhere, they'll never be recaptured and replaced reproduced, and or you can copy a bit, but you know, those old juices are there, and they give an edge to all your work, you know. But I think I'm much better off in every way, you know.
Yeah.
In terms of the aging process and what it does for what it is that's most important for me, to me, and that is to keep on busy doing something that I like to do, I don't find age taken away from that. No. I don't. I don't. Aging isn't that bad. What's bad about it is just growing old and feeling it, you know, really, and have to go to the doctor's for it, that sort of thing. And it's that's not good. It's kind of a drag. It's an adventure in a way.
So I got a million-dollar question for you, I think, if I can find the right words for it.
Please do.
Is there something in your experience of growing older that you feel is how do I put this? You know, I'm at a loss for words, which is a terrible thing for a writer and a speaker to be.
Something in my experience
of growing old that is leading you, to death in a way that is like opening you up to something, as opposed to the end of something. Is it something you feel that is beginning in you that has to do with death?
That's a great question. That's nicely put.
Okay, that's a
relief. And it's very clear. And it's very hard to answer in a way for me. Yeah. Because I never thought about it exactly in those terms. I'll put it this way. Growing old is not bad, except for those things I've already mentioned in terms of physicality, debilitations, some mental things. It gets you closer to death, you know. So, I mean, everybody's aware of it. Lots of people, you know, I guess, that's not something that they are interested in, is their death. They know it's coming, and they don't think about it. I think about it all the time. Yeah. Yeah, I do. But I'm not obsessed with it. It's just there. I'm closer. And being the kind of person I am that's interested in this sort of thing, well, you're this age, and how many more years have you got? And I think along those terms, and I guess that's common with everybody. In the course of that, do I do anything more different or any different? Yeah, I think I accelerate a little bit, but I still avoid doing those things that I would like to do before I die. I'll never do them. They're gone. They're dead.
Mm-hmm.
I think about them now and again, important things that I'd like to put together into some sort of a printed form, say. A statement, they won't be done. Getting back to this aging and getting closer to the meaning of life, is that not what we're talking about?
Yeah, I didn't put it that way, so as I said, I wasn't sure words to use.
Put it again that your way.
Well, I'll put it in a new way. Do you feel a sense of curiosity about dying?
Oh, well, that's another question, Jay's not... No, I have no. I don't think in terms of curiosity. What I think about in terms of dying is how it's going to transpire, and hoping that it's quick, and that I don't look bad doing it. You know, I do think that I'd like to look good dying, not make a you know, a graspy thing out of it, right? Or a gaspy or graspy thing out of dying, for it to happen. What does it get me closer to as far as the meaning of life? I'll get that back to my own question. Yeah, let's see, meaning of life, life and death. I'm dying. I'm dying now. I'm closer to death. I will be no longer here. I think of myself oftentimes when I'm walking the streets. Think, Bill, you won't be here. So these streets will not have your presence anymore. How about that, Bill? I think that way. How about that? People will not... You won't be here anymore, Bill. This clothing will not be yours anymore, Bill. It's, you know, I'm not here. This apartment is whatever. The world is without you to get bigger now. But I think about that. What about that? Well, it's the same old story. I mean, I'm not that much anyway in terms of being anything. I've always thought about myself as a speck, but not with derision. You know, so forget about it. You're only this small anyway. No, I never thought that, but it happens to be what I call the truth of thing. So death, and everybody does it. People are dying in this building all the time. I've lost so many acquaintances from this building. And so my own death, I don't want to stink up my apartment. I hope that I discovered quickly, and I would like to have some kind of system for that. You know, an alarm that when I'm dying, my system knows I'm dying, and it automatically connects this to me, to this system that says, Bill's dying, get here. For one reason, primarily, too, is that I have Neptune, which is I pay $1,500 for them to come and pick my body up, burn it, put it in an urn, send it to my family, which will maybe all be dead, except for niece, grandniece and nephew. That will not be done unless they discover me within 3 hours. So now it's more important to me. Neptune does not perform their duty after 3 hours.
Right.
Somebody has to be with you when you die.
That's the name of the company, Neptune?
Yeah. So I cannot be alone, and that's the way I'll be, undoubtedly. The way I'm living, I mean, unless it's in the hospital. And that's one of the advantages of getting into the hospital, I think, right at the end.
So I thought another way to phrase the question that I couldn't phrase. I think, right now, are you aware of something in you or some part of your experience that you're aware of now that won't be changed by dying, that your death won't change? Does that make sense? Did that make sense?
Have you got anything more in mind about it? That's pretty defined.
Yeah, it seems... Yeah.
I mean, it's quite clear. That's an interesting question. And that's a big question. I don't think of anything. No. I think when I... No, I think I've proven myself too many... along the line so much that where I'm coming from, Jason. Where I'm coming from is I believe that I'm a part of it. And I touch it. I'm there of it, and that I will return to it. That seems to be good. It seems to be good enough for me, so that when I'm dying without pain, I'm going out, what will I ask for and... suggest to myself that Bill, and you're expired, and there's this thing that's going on. Oh, Bill, why? Oh, it's too late. Are we getting kind of close to that idea?
Well, I think so, but because if you're talking about that you're part of something, you'll return to that thing that you're part of. Is that not present right now.
No, I'm altogether in that mode that we're talking about.
You're altogether what?
That mode, MOD, that mode is. So, what it is with that kind of thinking, which seems to me very accepting of death and not a big deal, realizing it's a very big deal, you know, but I don't want to be smart alecky. It's a big deal because gee, to leave all of this, Jason, I mean, God damn. No matter, you know, you're in your hospital bed, you're laying there, you've been there for 2 or 3 weeks. You're laying there and you're dying, and you're going to die in a moment. And you look at it, so what? You have nothing. You have absolutely nothing. You have tubes running into you, maybe. Oh, that's terrible. I don't want that. But anyway, you're dying. There's still that life spirit that is a positive thing. It's just simply that. It's just simply an up thing. It's an up thing. It's there. Now, if you live your life the other way around, with the other way around being life is a big mystery. I mean, why bother with it? To me, that life is not that much. It's not a mystery. It's absurd. It's silly. There's no reason to be, other than that it is. But I don't look at life as a negative thing at all. And so when I go out, I can't think of it any other way than being the way I feel right now. There is this thing about death now, I must say, because it just come into play here a couple of days back when I read about life being, or death being, a real good thing, you know. It's what you look forward to is death. That's when you're dying and going to go and get out of here. Let's get out of here, out of this life. My time is up. I'm done. I've done it. Well, at that period, that's what we certainly hope that we're not sorry for everything that we already haven't, you know, atoned ourselves for. And, you know. How do you feel about that? About death? About nearing it?
It's
I mean,
something
you're
I
close
think
to me. We were
about.
10 years ago.
I'm still close to getting closer every day, just like anyone else.
And you've gone through experiences that have been gotten you close to death, have you not? Self-imposed experience.
Well, yes and no. I mean,
Yes and no.
that's kind of because I don't choose, you know what? I don't choose my own choices, right? So, but if I'm driven into stuff, then it's something in me that's acting. Well, I mean, my experiences is that I'm here, as you might say, I'm here, and this is it, and this is all happening, and it's happening right now, and yet I know about, as you said, you know, a day will come when I'm not going to be here anymore, and these clothes will end up at the thrift store, and that's just a fact. That's just another fact in a whole multitude of facts. Like I'm going to eat dinner tonight and watch TV and then go to bed. You know, it's just one more fact that someday I won't be here, and yet. The world will carry on, you know, or the universe will carry on, or even if the universe explodes or dies, that something will always be here. And so the fact that I'm here now in the context of that truth that something is always here, to me that is a sense that I've always been here. I just know that in some weird sense, I've always been here and I will always be here, and not this person or this body or this name or this identity, but there's some. That's what I was trying to get at with you, or just see if you had words for it. That there's something in me that not only isn't afraid of dying, but that doesn't recognize death, doesn't know it.
Well, I agree with you wholeheartedly. There's something a little, that I don't quite get, and that is you've always been here. I never look at myself as always being here, but of course I have, because of the way I believe. I'm an accumulation of whatever it is that right now, and that will disperse when I die, but it's always been there and accumulated to form the person that's dead. That's how I look at it.
Because when we're not here, we're not aware of it, right? So we don't know that we're not here. So as long as we're aware that we're here, we're here. And then when we're not here, we're not aware of not being here, so we're always here.
Precisely. It's not that difficult, is
It's
it,
like
really?
sleep. It's like, no, you go to sleep,
Yeah.
you're not aware of your mind being wiped out, your identity dissolving, because you the next thing you know, you're awake.
Yeah, that identity, interesting. What happens to this accumulation of elements that form this the most different creature that's ever existed
Yeah.
on Earth has something to offer just in that itself.
Yeah.
We have something to offer just because that nobody else has it. We have it. We have this thing to offer, whatever that is, which is some sort of an element of what we're made of, and that goes. In my way, I'm looking at it. But where does it go to?
Yeah,
Well,
where does it go? It goes somewhere. I do think
yeah,
there's
well,
a.
let me finish. It's always been there. So first, there's that. Now, has it been developed? Is it greater, grander, more understand? No, it isn't at all. It is what it is at that time, and that's good enough. And that's the process. And that's what we're all about. It's to, be then in search for that which is not. You know that which we already are, but we don't know that what we already are. There are so many disparities that will never be. That's the mystery of it. So it's so why not? I mean, if one gets really bothered by that, which means that it is absurd. There is no answer to it, Jason, to what we are and what the meaning of it all is, except that it is. And is it even that? I don't know. I don't want to get into that. I mean, what is that? I don't. Is. Then what? Well, I don't think you go beyond is. I just don't think you go beyond that. You know?
So I got to ask you one last question before I go, because I will have to go. And that is be a short one, I think. 84, you're 3 years away from 84. And
I'll be 83. In December, a couple
right.
months.
So, in fact, you're almost just 2 years away from turning 84. And according to a friend I have, and he's very convinced of this, 84 is the natural age of enlightenment. So,
I like that.
What do you think about that? You think you're going to hold out for that?
Well, I want to know why.
I'll put you guys in touch if you really want to know, because I can't give you. But I can't give you his model. It's very unique and idiosyncratic.
Great. I expect to reach that age. You don't. And so, what did you have a question about? What is my thinking about reaching the age of enlightenment?
Yeah. I don't know. Just thought I'd throw that out there.
Aged, and you mean like evolving into something? Perhaps when you get older, is finally you reach the age of enlightenment?
Yeah, I think maybe, and this is just a guess, but maybe, I mean, I'm sure he's talking biologically because it's a specific age, but maybe it relates.
Yeah, it
to
must be, because what age does is we know that I think age gives you a certain advantage to it, to a wisdom if you're open to it and are accumulating some of it, a little bit of it along the way.
Yeah.
Ending of a fool at the end, which we've discussed already.
Yeah.
Are we really a fool? I'll never think of myself as really a fool, because the way I think. And, and that is, I really believe in it, you know. I really do, and I've been. I think I'm so lucky, and that's probably one reason why I'm such a positive ad about the whole mess that we're in, which we're doomed. I don't know, doomed to what? I don't know. Blowing ourselves up, baby, in order to get better. But 84 in the age of wisdom. If I'm talking like this, and I'm only a couple of years away from it, well, I don't know whether I'll ever experience the. I'm wondering what that will be—the age of enlightenment. I think what can it, what we've talked about this. I emailed a lot about we back and forth a time or two. At least you replied to your blog on it on enlightenment. That was the nicest series that you did on that.
Oh, you like that, yeah. Well, I'll throw something out there then, as far as this goes, that if the purpose of life is to let go of the need to control stuff, then enlightenment would be that we finally let go of all need to control anything. And so it makes
sense. I'll never reach that.
You don't think it'll reach that? Because it makes
sense. No, not until I die. I mean, that's the only way to lose control in my book.
Well, that's why enlightenment. I mean, that's why I'm saying enlightenment is a lot more rare than death. Death happens to everyone, and enlightenment happens to just about no one. But they're kind of the same, because they're both a complete letting go.
Right. I say right because sounds reasonable.
Yeah. Right. So the idea is if you get old enough...
So what are you searching for then? I mean, the age of enlightenment or enlightenment per se at any point. What is that? I mean, you know? I don't know. I think it's good to go for an enlightenment because what it does is it you let loose of things and you do, supposedly, or you want to, get less control over things. That's because of what we've been talking about in terms of the not value of control, which we haven't gotten into. There's value and not value of control, but to release yourself of control, because then you get closer to what's there to control? You know, I mean, if you survive this long, particularly, I mean, you've controlled enough of it to get this far, I guess. You fed your face and put shelter around you and clothing, but I mean, you know, as far as I don't want to get too off base, but as far as relieving yourself of control, and when you reach 84, maybe that's the age of death. I don't want to even set that in my mind, but death is as close to enlightenment as you get. I think you that's what you said, but enlightenment is something even beyond death, I think you said. Did you
know? No, I didn't say, I don't know, or do I know what enlightenment is, but it seems to me that enlightenment would relate to death in the sense of letting go of all option of control while you're still alive. Because, of course, when you die, that's it. You have no control.
Yeah, so that gets us to death itself, and I'm nearer that than you are. And how about that? How about it when you die, then, okay, so you've done everything, you've reached everything, you've let go of everything, you're dying, you're dead. Yeah. You will be dead. And you know that, and you appreciate that because of your perceptions and the way you've built your philosophy all around this whole thing. So what? I've liked life. I really loved it, and I'm at the end of it, and I'm not in pain, and I'm going, and I feel good about things. What do I feel good about? Well, I'm here. I don't know. You know, is that it? and I'm here, and I'm going, and okay, bye bye. I don't know. Who knows what they? I don't know that there's enough of it written about what people really do think when they're dying. I can't come up. How much material is there on that? I don't come across much of that. Seems like when people are dying, there's not much talk about it.
They don't stick around to talk about it. That's the problem, right?
So. But I mean, as writers and stuff, isn't that what they're supposed to do? I mean, with those last moments.
Oh, well, Timothy Leary filmed his death, but I don't know if he's a particularly good example of anything. But so hopefully, my God, as a writer, I hope I have more important things to do than testify, you know, at that in those final moments. I mean,
well, I think that testifying about what it is that I think that's terribly interesting to people.
I'm sure it would be, but I mean, to me, I mean, as far as letting go, if I hadn't let go of my desire to testify, then I'd probably be writing, I'm not ready.
right.
His
well,
last
I, I, I really thank you for the opportunity here to blabber on like. But anyway, I don't want to get formal.
No, but I thank you, formally or informally. I mean, I'm glad we did this, and it's nice to. I mean, it's the first time I talked with somebody. Of your age about death, that to me is a very rare thing, I think. And
well, I'm about your mother. Well, your mother wouldn't be much different if she were alive, would she?
She would be your age, and my father would also be your age if they had lived. So
certainly
is quite poignant for me.
Monkey said to man, I want your fireman. Said to monkey, I want your brain. Monkey said to man, my desire is to be like the mankind.
That was me and Bill Morrison talking about death. life and death and everything in between. This is The Liminalist. I'm going to give some thanks to my patrons because I didn't mention you last week when I was thanking donators. So thanks to Molly, SC Van Dyra, Mark, Kimberly, Stephen, Slava, Keith, Zed, Jamel, Anil, Johnny, Paige, and Stephanie. I also wanted to mention you all because I'm thinking about terminating the Patreon account for a couple of reasons. One being that I don't like the Patreon. I don't like the way they haven't responded to my messages. They're not really very helpful. And I just feel like it's just one more corporation that's sucking off my life force, because I have to get all the money from Patreon through PayPal, so then it's going through two. And also, just there just hasn't been any new patrons in such a while, so I guess I'll give it another week or two. If anyone else signs up, then I'll take that as a sign to continue, but it's probably just as well for people to give one-off donations through PayPal at this point, I think. Either way, thanks for your continued support. I hope if I do end the Patreon account, you'll continue giving me your money. Next week, well, actually tomorrow, I will be talking to Barry Crimmers of the film Call Me Lucky, and hopefully that will come off, and that will be next week's podcast.
Here comes the monkey, and monkey speaks his mind.